In our first reading this evening, you'll be very happy to know that you heard the first reading for my funeral liturgy. Now, if any of you are hoping that you're going to hear it soon, from your lips to God's ears, okay? But no, I'm just kidding. But it is my funeral reading, and it's because the imagery in there is important to me for several reasons. First of all, as I was growing up, I went to school and was helped to be formed by the Sisters of Divine Providence. Different group than Sister Diane's group. We're cousins, but we're not really the same group, okay? This particular group came from Germany to work with the German immigrants in the Pittsburgh area and eventually spread also to the St. Louis area, west central Illinois and St. Louis, where my family came into contact with them. Both where my dad grew up and went to school in Illinois, and also where I grew up and went to school at Mount Providence. And it is that mountain of Providence that the reading speaks of today. We weren't really on a mountain, we were on a big hill in North County, North St. Louis County. But that mountain, that hill of Providence became very special to me because it was a place where I had what I needed in order to grow. I was loved there. I felt secure there. I developed my love of learning. And also, while I was young and in my formative ways, I also received my first cookbook there. Okay? And receiving my first cookbook there, we were in a part of the library, and I took, you know, Sister Dorothy, one time, you know, it was one of those times where they said, oh, go find something to read off the shelves. And I found this cookbook, and I started reading it, and she said, I don't think anybody's looked at that book for as long as I've taught in this room. Why don't you just take that home with you? And so I did. And I began to start to fix things that were a little fancier than what I'd been cooking up to that point in time. And it began to be a habit of mine that I believed in feasting. I believed in having a good meal. A meal where you took the extra time to plan a menu for the people that you loved and to execute that menu. Even more so now that I've, you know, have my own kitchens in life, you know, that I get to prepare that meal with my friends in that space. And it's one of those things that you do when it's not just a meal, but it's an experience, a dining experience. And you find the right wine to go with the right food. And sometimes, if you're serving a 3 or 4 course dinner, you'll pick 3 or 4 different kinds of wine because the way the wine goes with the different courses. I love that. I love spending the whole evening having dinner. I love doing that because it's there that we share stories and there that we share life. And the most important thing is kind of start to lay themselves bare on that same table where we dine. Now, the description of juicy, rich food and pure, choice wines is a wonderful image for me. And I believe that God provides that. And it's no surprise that I always see those tables connected to this table. Because this table is another place. One of the most important places, probably for those of us of faith, the most important place, where we share stories, where we share the meal. It's again a special thing. It's the only time we use these dishes, the only time we set the table this way. This meal is a notch above. And it's here at this meal that again God provides for our lives. It's at this table where our tears eventually get wiped away. It's at this table where our lives are forgiven their messiness and that we're called into a new way of being. God, who looked to save us, comes into our midst in the presence of a meal. I want that to be remembered and all the different ways I enjoyed that at my funeral. And if there's any wine left in my wine cellar at that point in time, I want everybody to just open it up and have a good time. Now, it's interesting because there's a few things that we don't stop to think about what Isaiah was saying. Because when we listen to Isaiah's story, we immediately think about the heavenly banquet for the most part. We think, okay, that when that's going to be the fulfillment of everything, it's going to be heaven. And heaven, for those of us who believe in heaven, is the fulfillment of all those dreams, of course. But one of the things that we miss is that Isaiah couldn't have been talking about heaven because they weren't thinking about heaven at the time that Isaiah wrote this. Ideas about heaven and about a life eternal only came into being a little after the time of Isaiah. So Isaiah wasn't talking about the heavenly banquet. He was talking about right there. He believed that God was going to provide something special there on a different mountain. Not the mountain of heaven, but the mountain of Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. He believed that God would provide for everyone there. Now, the interesting part is not that Isaiah predicts a meal, because there's all kinds of imagery of meals in the scriptures. But the interesting point about this meal is, and it's almost scandalous, because Isaiah basically says to everybody, and it's not just going to be your meal. God's going to invite everybody to the meal. Well, now that is the shocker. Were we not the chosen people? What do you mean God's going to invite other people to the meal? We're special. But Isaiah's vision is bigger than that. Isaiah says that sometimes, and as Jesus tells the parable, okay, that sometimes those that were invited don't show up for the meal the way that they should. And so we're reminded that in God's imagery, and as Isaiah sees it, God's going to invite everyone to the meal. Everyone? Really? What about the people I don't like? What about the people who I just fundamentally disagree with? What about those people that I don't understand as much as I've tried? What about those people of different faiths? What about those people of different beliefs and backgrounds? What about those people of different races and tongues? And yet in Isaiah's vision, on that mountain of providence, God indeed invites them all. Now the interesting thing about that is, how do you and I feel about that? You see, it's God's invitation. God's the one that makes the invitation. It's not our feast. As a matter of fact, both in Isaiah's telling and in Jesus' retelling of a new story in the gospel today, this parable. Are you about sick of the parables yet? In this string, every time we get to the string every 3 years, by the time we get finished with this string of parables, I am worn out. Because God will not leave me alone. God keeps digging me in the ribs. God keeps poking me in the heart. God keeps spiking me in the head. Because I know God's not finished with me yet. And as Jesus tells this story in Matthew's telling today, again, remember, he's just re-entered Jerusalem. The chief priests and the elders of the people are plotting against him, and he knows it. They don't like the fact that he has become this charismatic leader. He's not a member of the inside group, although he is Jewish. But he's not a member of the inside group. And they don't like that the people are starting to side with him. And they're afraid that with them siding with them, with them siding with Jesus, that suddenly the Romans could clamp down on them and change their way of life. And so they're plotting how to do him in. And it's in this context that he tells the story again. He says many were invited to the feast, but they wouldn't come. Now, can you imagine the event of a lifetime being invited to dine on rich, juicy foods and pure, choice wines, but yet saying, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to go. And so they're invited again, almost the king, almost thinking, well, they must not understand. And so he says, hey, look, I've killed the calves and the fattened cattle. The feast is ready. Everybody come. And they ignore him and they go the other direction. One to his home, one to his business. And then the rest take the servants who are delivering the message and they kill them. And so the king says, I'm going to start over again. I'm going to invite a whole different group. He says, the first that were invited, refused the invitation. They're not worthy of the invitation. Go out into the byways and bring in everyone, the good and the bad alike. Bring in everyone. And they do. And Jesus still isn't finished with us. Because he takes that last little bit and gets us one more time. And he says, but then they run into a guest there who really just didn't even seem to care. Who didn't seem to care about the invitation, didn't care about preparing, didn't care about wearing something special. Nothing. And he didn't even have a word to say when he was asked about it. And even that one has said, just bind his feet and throw him into the darkness outside. Where there'll be wailing and gnashing of teeth. Many are called, but few are chosen. Now, when you hear that story, where do you want to be? Do you want to be in the darkness outside? Do you want to be wailing and grinding your teeth? Of course not. But we all say, oh no, I want to be one of the ones that is called and chosen. That is the right answer, by the way. Okay? I want to be called. I want to be chosen. But yet, so often when we come to the feast, instead of making it one of openness and love, we want to decide who we're going to eat with. We want to just eat with our own kind. And while that may be a good human response, is it the divine response? And is it the divine invitation? And I'm going to say no. Gives us the richest, juiciest foods to dine on and the purest, choice wines to drink of. And sometimes we get worried about the people we're eating with. Sometimes it's my own wicked stepbrothers that sound the most uninviting sometimes. We only want you if. We only want you if. And I keep thinking to myself, yeah, that's gonna welcome everybody. That's gonna work. Not. The invitation in some ways isn't ours to give. The invitation's always been God's to give. And it seems to me that we'd figure some of that out. And stop trying to elbow people out of the way on our way to the kingdom. And rather, how do we figure out how to link up with others? Is there room in these pews for people of all different kinds of beliefs? What about the people that are going to vote the opposite of the way you're going to vote in a few weeks? Are you willing to share a pew with them? Because if not, there may not be room for you at the banquet. Are you willing to welcome people of different ideologies, some different backgrounds from time to time? Are we willing to share life with them to the degree that we can at least move on our way to the kingdom together? Because if not, are we elbowing each other out of the way? You know how snotty we can be with Catholics, even with other Christians. Oh, you're very nice people, but, yeah, you poor things. And that's pretty much often the way that we think and respond. How inviting that is. But how does God see it? All I can tell you is the stories. All I can tell you is what Jesus says. And Jesus, in so many ways, tells the story of the invitation to all, the good and the bad alike. How do we come to the feast? Paul reminds us that once in a while we experience abundance, and every once in a while we experience hunger. I hope that our hunger makes it possible for us to understand others' hungers. And let us, with our lives, be open enough to invite others to discover the Jesus that we've found. The Jesus who feeds us beyond all our imagining. The Jesus who invites us to a feast of rich, juicy foods and pure, choice wines. The Jesus who invites us to that mountain of providence where he will provide for all peoples. Let us pray that our God will open our hearts and keep us generous so that we may share of our abundance with others.